Narada Vacha. The great Saint Narada replied, Bovo. Hello. Prajapate. Oh, ruler of the citizens. Rajan. Oh, king. Pashun. Animals. Pasha. Please see. Vaya. By you. Adhvare. In the sacrifice. Samgyapitan. Killed. Jivasangan. Groups of animals. Nirgrinena. Without pity. Sahasrasaha. In thousands. Translation. The great Saint Narada said, O ruler of the citizens, my dear king, please see in the sky those animals which you have sacrificed without compassion and without mercy in the sacrificial arena. You can repeat. The great Saint Narada said, O ruler of the citizens, my dear king, please see in the sky
those animals which you have sacrificed
Without compassion, and without mercy,
in the sacrificial arena.
So purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Because animal sacrifice is recommended in the Vedas, there are animal sacrifices in almost all religious rituals. However, one should not be satisfied simply by killing animals according to the directions of the scriptures. One should transcend the ritualistic ceremonies and try to understand the actual true purpose of life. Narada Muni wanted to instruct the king about the real purpose of life and invoke a spirit of renunciation in his heart. Knowledge and the spirit of renunciation, jnana vairagya, are the ultimate goal of life. Without knowledge, one cannot become detached from material enjoyment. And without being detached from material enjoyment, one cannot make spiritual advancement. Karmis are generally engaged in sense gratification, and for this end, they prepare to commit so many sinful activities. Animal sacrifice is but one such sinful activity. Consequently, by his mystic power, Narada Muni showed King Prachinibhari shot the dead animals which he had sacrificed. So, Narada Vacha Bobo Prajapati Rajan Pashun Pasha Tvaya Tvare Samgyapitan Jiva Sankhan Nikrinena Sahashashaha. So, Om Magana Timuranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Udmeditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So, King Prachinibhari Shat was performing authorized Vedic sacrifices. It's not that he was doing something contrary to what the Vedas prescribe. However, still, there seems to be some reaction to these activities that he was performing. And there's several reasons for that. One reason is that if there is any mistake, or there is any mispronunciation of the mantras, or any mistake in the performance of the sacrifices, then the animal is not given a better birth, but rather the animal is just killed and has to go through the normal cycle of birth and death and transmigration and stuff like that. So, therefore, if there's an error in the sacrifice, then the person performing the sacrifice has to suffer. Therefore, in the Vedic sacrifices, you had one person who was performing the sacrifice, another person who was chanting the mantras, another person who was observing or listening to the person chanting the mantras and seeing if the person was making any mistakes, and another person correcting the mantras. So it's a very precise performance. Not generally, but in every case, the Vedic mantras had to be done precisely right. Every pronunciation had to be precisely right, and every activity had to be precisely right, and just one little error, and then that's it. You either get the opposite effect, no effect, or a sinful effect. So that's one reason. Another reason is given here in the translation, and actually in the verse, it says, Nigri Nena. That means without any pity. In other words, he wasn't, this King Prachini Barjat, he was so enthusiastic about material aggrandizement, which is what these sacrifices are performed for, is that he wasn't feeling sorry that the animals had to be killed or any compassion for the animals. He was just seeing the animals as an instrument for his own sense gratification, which is interesting because generally, if we approach people like that, we see them as instruments for our sense gratification, or we approach animals as instruments for our sense gratification. What they can do for us rather than what we can do for them. And generally, that's relationships in this world. And when someone no longer pleases us, then we reject the person or even do something worse. You know, we may beat them up, we may abuse them verbally, physically, or whatever. So the relationships in this world are like that. You know, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. So it's unfortunate. But 99%, I mean, all material relationships are like that, and 99% of relationships are like that because some relationships are spiritual, whereby one is willing to sacrifice. So like that story in the Ramayana about Valmiki, and we told that story many times before, where Valmiki was doing so much sacrifice for his family, he was engaged in the activity of dacoitry. He was attacking people who were coming by the path and taking their money. And one day he attacked the Saptarishis, and the Saptarishis said, your family loves you so much, are they willing to accept some of the karma that you have to accept because of your heinous activity of making money in this way? And Valmiki Rishi, he wasn't Valmiki Rishi at that time, but Ratnagara was his name, he said, of course they would. And then he went to them and they absolutely refused. They said, you know, it's your karma. We want the money. You get the karma. So generally relationships are like that. Of course, it's not so obvious. You know, obviously, the wife is not going to tell the husband, you know, you got to make money. That's your business. Your business is to satisfy me. And it wouldn't make for such a congenial relationship. Although, that's basically the mentality behind most relationships like that. It's your business to do this. And that's, therefore you find, especially in Kali Yuga, the relationships break up very, very quickly. There's actually so much divorce, and I've been seeing that as I've been traveling around the world, that even amongst devotees, or let's say especially amongst devotees or whatever, devotees have just a very high rate of divorce too. Not real devotees, but people who are aspiring to be devotees or neophyte devotees, because they take the relationship as exploitative. In other words, the other person is supposed to do something for them, and that's why they either get married or whatever. But in the traditional culture, people get married not because they just want to, at least not in every case, obviously, there are some sense gratifiers, but not because they just simply see an instrument, the person is an instrument for the gratification, but generally they get married to carry out the family tradition to do something for their parents. This is what I've seen in India. That's the primary impetus, at least for men getting married, is that their mother is putting so much pressure on them to get married, and the mother is putting so much pressure on them, basically because the mother wants either prestige, to take care of the little grandchildren, or the mother wants to have some sort of old age insurance where they take care of them. And the child does that out of a feeling of duty. I'm not criticizing the mother, but I'm taking this example to show the child's understanding that out of duty, yes, I'm going to get married because that's what my mother wants, and that way we'll take care of my mother, we'll satisfy my mother. Like that. I'm not saying that's spiritual. I'm just saying that's the way the culture is. And just like I was speaking to one of my disciples in India recently and asking her, and you know, she wants to... anyway, she was thinking she wants to remain single. Okay, she was saying that. She wants to remain single. And I was pointing out, I said, look, you're only 21, 22, 23 years old. You know, things are going to happen later on in life. There's biological clocks. He says, I know, but I can tolerate it. And I was thinking, oh, yeah. So, but ultimately, you're going to have to deal with your mother. And she said, yeah, that's a tough one. Because your mother is going to put pressure on you to get married. And then you have to take care of her. And she said, yes, it's my duty to take care of her. So anyway, so there's this sense of duty. That was the point I'm getting to. That in traditional culture, there's actually a sense of duty towards one's parents, one's spiritual master, and a sense of loyalty, which is really interesting. But what I've noticed in America is that this sense of loyalty, forget about the word duty, because that's sort of a bad word nowadays. But loyalty is not a bad word yet. It will be. But the sense of loyalty is not really inculcated in the American psyche. Therefore, you have the children sending their parents away, putting them in old people's homes or whatever, even euthanasia, you know, kill the old person because the person is a burden, economic burden. So you don't have that sense of loyalty. And I observe that even within the society of ISKCON devotees. It's not really loyalty to one's parents, not even the spiritual master. The spiritual master is seen as like an object of a gratification for the devotee. Either, you know, I know spiritual, quote, gratification, because we still maintain our enjoying spirit in the name of Krishna consciousness. Actually, Prabhupada said we shouldn't try to see Krishna, we should try to have Krishna see us by our spirit of devotion, our spirit of service. Prabhupada came from a very service-oriented culture. Even the material culture that Prabhupada came from was very much oriented in terms of duty, service, and loyalty like that. So, you know, what I've seen is that people just don't have that loyalty. If there's something that they conceive of as being more attractive, they'll jump for it. Whether it's something more attractive spiritually or material facility, whatever, people jump for it. Not immediately, you know, they take a few minutes. But it's like that. And I was just thinking, I mean, I was thinking in relationship to my relationship to Prabhupada, that, you know, what keeps me going in the Krishna conscious movement, performing service. And it's basically my loyalty to Prabhupada. Somehow or other, I came from a different culture than the rest of you, where loyalty was actually very important. And so it's like that. Even though there's so many difficult things and sacrifices and austerities we may have to endure in the performance of our service, I mean, if you had to ask me, what would I rather be doing than be in a GBC meeting, I'd probably say any damn thing. You know, rather anything. You know, I'd rather just, like, sit in a sauna bath for, like, 10 hours with the temperature being 120 degrees centigrade. I know that's overboiling. So, but we do that. Just like I was given a class, it was interesting. This is a little interesting interlude. I was given a class in Sweden, and I was talking about the austerities of sitting in the GBC meeting. And the austerities of management in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada did say in Kali Yuga management is a great austerity, one of the greatest austerities in Kali Yuga. And then someone in the class had misheard what I said. And they thought it was like criticism of management or strategic planning or even whatever. And they called up a particular individual. You know, not in the GBC, it was a particular individual. Anyway, there was a particular individual who got called up on the phone, and they said, you know, we were just sitting in Sri Krishna Goswami's class, and we heard him say that, basically I was talking about management, institutions destroy the spirit of religion. So I was talking about that. Now, I mean, that's something Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. I said, institutions, there's never been a time when institutions have not destroyed the spirit of religion. And I was pointing one side. And the other side I was saying, but we need an institution to carry out Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya's mission. So you're caught betwixt and between these two points here. And Prabhupada wanted an institution. So basically, we have to make an institution that will enable us to carry out the spirit of the religion without losing the spirit of the religion. And that's a real challenge. It probably hasn't been done since time immemorial. So I was pointing that out at both sides of it. And the person misheard what I was saying. They thought, well, I'm saying there shouldn't be any institution. And so they called up this particular person who's in charge of our strategic planning. And I get a call. You know, I'm in Serbia, and I get a call. This is a few days later. I heard you said you shouldn't have an institution. I said, huh? No, I said, no. I was pointing things out, you know, the balance of things like this. And I was pointing out, you know, because also I talked about how I sit in the GBC meetings and I'd rather be anywhere else, even in a sauna bath. I don't know if I use that example. But I said, you know, it's an austerity. You know, it's a real austerity. I'd rather be, I'm doing anything else, practically speaking. So, so I pointed this out, that the holistic understanding of the class, I was presenting both sides, the balance, and then how we have to stick to Srila Prabhupada's mission no matter what. And this is the principle of loyalty. All right, so that was the point I was making, the principle of loyalty. And the person understood, yes. Said, well, I guess they misunderstood, misheard the class. And they apologized, so I was let off. The heat was taken off me because of that. So that was my point. The whole point is that, you know, I stick to that because it's my loyalty. And this is a very important principle because Krishna tests us like that. He wants to see whether we're a fair weather friend or not. Fair weather friend means we're a friend when the weather is good, you know, or a disciple when the weather is good. You know, everything's nectar. Everything's nectar. Or we want something for ourselves. Of course, we have to be practical, too. I mean, we can't just think, I'm a pure devotee. We were presenting this also as we were traveling around, that many people are very impractical and they think of themselves as pure devotees when, in fact, they're absolutely not. So we have to understand our particular situation. However, loyalty can still be there. You know, we may have to make some adjustment in our own acceptance of certain things for sense gratification, which is dangerous, which I'll point out a little later in class. But you know, we have to be aware of those things. Like Prabhupada said that here, without knowledge, one cannot become detached from material enjoyment. So the knowledge referred to here is not just the knowledge that the material world is a place of misery, but the knowledge of what's going on in our own hearts, too. Like sages are called introspective sages. So we really have to be honest to ourselves as well as to others. So let's get back to the point of loyalty. So this is really what keeps you. If anyone were to ask me, you know, what keeps you going, it's this principle of loyalty to Prabhupada. Then. And loyalty means, basically, not simply you take a pledge of allegiance. You know, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the country of America, whatever it is. But you actually, it's a sense of identity that I am, just like I was talking about this disciple who wants, you know, who considers herself, duty to serve her mother, like that. So, but you consider your identity in terms of the object of loyalty, which is really interesting. In other words, I consider myself a servant of Prabhupada. It's not just that I am serving Prabhupada, because I'm serving so many people. You know, like if a dog comes, I'll serve him prasadam. But it's not just that you're serving Prabhupada, you consider yourself to be, your identity, a servant of Prabhupada. There's a difference. I mean, obviously, if you consider yourself to be a servant of Prabhupada, you will serve. But it's not necessarily true if you're serving that you're a servant of Prabhupada. Do you understand the difference? In other words, let's take the syllogism. If you're a servant of Prabhupada, you will serve Prabhupada. But it's not necessarily true that if you're serving Prabhupada, that you're a servant of Prabhupada. Anyway, you may be serving for mixed motives or whatever, but one should consider themselves a servant of the spiritual master, a servant of Srila Prabhupada. And this way we remain steady, regardless of what happens. You know, people ask me, how do you remain steady? This happens, people attack you, weather attacks you, or bugs attack you, or, you know, financial situations attack you, or, you know, or illnesses attack you. How do you remain steady? Because I'm just simply thinking what Prabhupada wanted. That's my identity. You know, why, just like right now, I'm in the morning program. You see that. And, you know, I may be suffering from jet lag or whatever, but everybody knows I get up early, go to the morning program, go to Mangal Arati, because I know that's what Prabhupada would want. That's all. I mean, it's a very simple equation for me. It doesn't take much computation. It's just like, you know, I'm a servant of Prabhupada. Prabhupada would want that. If I didn't go, Prabhupada would not be happy. Prabhupada wants me to go. Prabhupada wants me to set a good example. There's so many letters like that. And so, therefore, I do it. I don't think twice about it. It's not like I'm saying, should I or shouldn't I? It's Ekeha Kurunandana. So this is just the way it is. Or, you know, why do you remain in ISKCON? Because Prabhupada wants it. You know, it's a simple equation. I'm serving to Prabhupada. And so therefore, you know, that's really, if we want to make spiritual advancement, you know, Yashya Prasada Bhagavad Prasada, you all know that equation, just simply, it's a sense of changing our sense of self-identification. And then once we do that, then everything just comes into place. I'm sure there'll be other desires, you know, things that'll attract you, you know, there's so many, it'll be like ghosts coming sometimes, desires that attract you or things. It's just, but then you'll just keep on going ahead. Like that, like in India, you have these animals. What are the animals? It's not a cow, not the ox, you know, what's the animal that, buffalo, yeah, it's like the buffalo just keeps walking ahead. You know, you could be honking a horn, you could be like the most attractive person in the world that just keeps plodding ahead, you know, plod, 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 plod. And actually, one devotee, it just hit someone's car the other day. Buffalo just like smashed, kept walking ahead. So, anyway, so that's the secret. That's one of the many secrets in spiritual life, like that. To just like be thinking, the sense of identity, the sense of servitude. And then one will stay in ISKCON. Here's the point. One will stay in ISKCON serving Prabhupada. That's all. That's a very simple thing. It's not so complex. But if one's loyalty is divided either to his senses or whatever, then one won't do that. Simple as that. Simple as that. Servant of Prabhupada, equation, Prabhupada wants us to stay in ISKCON, Prabhupada wants us to serve ISKCON. Okay, got to do it. Simple. Very, very simple. And, you know, I may feel this, I may feel that, whatever, or there may be so many problems, or there may be so many people who are acting in ways that are contrary to devotional service. That's all right. You just keep on doing what Prabhupada wanted, and things will come out at the end. All right. Okay. That's one point. Okay, another point that I wanted to talk about here was the principle of licensing. That may appear to be something that has nothing to do with the verse. But licensing for sense gratification. Because we all have different licenses for sense gratification. Like a sannyasi, his license is restricted. It's like, you know, sometimes you go to the driver's license bureau, and because I have glasses, I have a restricted license. What does a restricted mean? Restricted means I can only drive a car if I wear my glasses, or contact lenses, or some corrective type of situation. Other people have other types of restrictions in their licenses. Someone may be only allowed to drive during the day because they have some problem with the night vision. Other people may only be allowed to drive if they have another driver next to them because they're a learner. There's so many different restrictions in a license. So basically, in the Vedic system, different people situated differently in the varnas and ashrams are given different licenses for sense gratification or licenses to do service, whatever. Like if one has a second initiation, one has a license to worship the deities, right? If one gets married, one has a license to be with his wife. If you don't get married, you don't have a license to be with your wife. You don't have a wife. Right? Yeah, it's like that. Like I was just speaking. Oh, yeah, speaking to someone else in India. And she said, I just broke up with my fiancé. And I said, oh, you just broke up with your boyfriend. And she said, no, fiancé. I said, whatever you may call it. Because, you know, if it's fiancé, that means you were going to get married. And she said, the person's calling me still on the phone all the time. Anyway, there's a license that's required if one's going to associate intimately. And that license is called marriage. But however, even if one has a license, just like if you have a driver's license, it doesn't give you the right to drive anywhere and everywhere and anytime at any speed at any side of the road unless you're in India. It doesn't give you that right. Now, you could still get a ticket for speeding. You know, it's not that the police pulls you over. You're going 85 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour zone. And you say, the police says, you know, you're going fast. And you say, I have a license. And then the police said, that's good. At least you won't go to jail. However, you're still going to lose your license. Or you're still going to have a big fine or whatever they do as a result of that. You're still going to have to suffer. So in the same way, we may have a license for sense gratification. You know, marriage is certainly a license, but here marriage is not being discussed. What's being discussed here is the license, one of the licenses that Kshatriyas have. One of the licenses that Kshatriyas have is they're allowed to eat meat or they're allowed to perform animal sacrifices. Another license is they're allowed to have many wives. Now, this is a previous age we're talking about. Or they're allowed to gamble, and sometimes they're allowed to drink. So someone may think, I really want to be a Kshatriya. It sounds good. You know, I can break all the four regulated principles and be Krishna conscious. Isn't it? I mean, even you have, you know, there's hunting, like when I'm reading the Ramayana, that Lord Ramachandra's out there hunting, and sometimes even there's meat eating, and then you're reading about other instances in the Vedic literatures, how a person has many wives, and in other instances, someone's playing chess and gambling. So many instances like that, isn't it? Or violence. Yeah, I said intoxication already. So you may read about those things. Of course, as I mentioned, that's for a previous age. But those are all licenses for various reasons. One reason the licenses are given is because people are going to do it anyway and trying to restrict it under certain circumstances. So even if one follows the terms of their license, one may be subject to sinful activities because they're getting attached and they're doing it out of a sense of sense gratification, like King Prachinibhari is doing here. So Prabhupada said, in this regard, there is danger even on the royal road. I mean, for example, let's take hunting. There's a license for hunting. Okay, so Dasarath, good old King Dasarath, he was out hunting one day. And while he was out hunting, he heard the sound of what he thought was a deer drinking. And he shot at the sound because the Kshatriyas are supposed to learn the art of shooting the arrow at a particular sound. And so we shot at the sound, the deer drinking, what he thought was the deer drinking, and happened to be a young Brahmin boy who was getting water in a water pot or in some sort of container for his parents. And he had killed the Brahmin boy. And when he killed the Brahmin boy, he was serving parents who were blind. he got ultimately cursed by the parents just before they went back to Godhead, that he would die feeling the separation from his son, because the parents couldn't live without their son, and they were feeling separation, and that's why they died. So Dasarath had to suffer, even though he was engaged in some bona fide activity. And we see a similar case with Pandu. Pandu was engaged in a bona fide activity of hunting, and he happened to kill a rishi and his wife simultaneously as they were engaged in taking the form of deer and mating. And so then he had to be cursed that he would die if he ever touched or embraced his wife in any sort of romantic fashion. And then also, as far as polygamy, there was a license for polygamy. Dasarath had to suffer because of that too, right? Now, Kaikeyi really wasn't the most ideal of wives, at least at that particular time. And Chitraketu had to suffer. You know, he went for 10 million wives simultaneously. So the point is there's danger even on the royal road. And what to speak of gambling with Yudhisthira. I mean, so many examples you can give how they're suffering. So it's not that, the point is that not that because you have a license that you can let down your guard. And we all do have a license for sense gratification regardless of our ashram or varna. I mean, just like eating, for example. You know, just because we have a license to eat prasadam, obviously, it's not that the Prabhupada said many, many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam. That's interesting, isn't it? Because you can still get attached to the tongue and still have an uncontrolled tongue if you're not alert. So there's danger everywhere. Even in, especially spiritual life, even in spiritual life, anywhere there's danger. So you have to be extremely conscious. Vadan mui sarvadana mate, as we're chanting every morning. Vadan mui means caution. You'll see, sarvadan means caution, sorry. Sarvadan means all caution. Just like in India, you'll see the sign, sarvadan, means take caution. And in India, you really need to take caution. I just, you know, just came from the road in India, and it's very interesting. Going in a car in India, or even driving my bicycle in India. I mean, coming back from Govardhan to Delhi, the guy had to leave his horn on the whole time. I don't think he, you know, in America, someone will blow their horn. In India, you push the button, the horn goes off. It's the opposite, you know, the opposite. You know, push the button, stops the horn. Anyway, so the whole trip. So, but basically, sabadan means caution. So one has to be extremely alert. So if one is in previous age performing, you know, these particular sacrifices, which were done even by great personalities, Lord Ramachandra did it, Yudhisthira Maharaj did it. I mean, all the great personalities did these sacrifices. One has to be very alert to have the right attitude, the attitude of compassion and mercy, as mentioned here. And one has to be very alert to do it properly. And one has to be very alert to consider oneself to be a servant and doing it out of sense of service. Then you can avoid danger. Otherwise, you know, you become complacent in doing these things, complacent in devotional service, complacent even in hearing Krishna Katha. Because even when you hear Krishna Katha, weeds can grow if you're not alert. Then you will have danger in the spiritual path. So, anyway, so these are some of the points I was making, I wanted to make today. So any questions or comments or arguments? We have about 1 minute left for class. Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Yes. Go on, Sankirtan. What? Yeah, there was killing of animals. I mean, look at the danger that Sita got in just because she wanted to have the skin of the deer. But they were kshatriyas. That was allowed. Hunting, not Obviously not slaughterhouses, Srila Prabhupada would say. But look at what happened. She wanted the skin of the deer and she got kidnapped. There's an example for us. Of course, this was the Lord's pastime. It was supposed to happen like that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's an example for us in that, that we have to be careful. Even if we have a license, or a Kshatriya has a license, or a Grahastha has a license, or a Sannyasi has a license, then if we get to it, like a Sannyasi or a Guru has a license to accept worship. However, if he's not alert, he will be growing weeds and he'll get more anarthas because he's accepting that in the name of Krishna consciousness. And I've seen that happen again and again and again. So any of our licenses have to be utilized with great caution. Okay? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gopinanda ki jai.